The Theosophical Society presents Occult Commentaries featuring C.W. Leadbeater, C. Janarajadasa, and G.S. Arundale. The Great White Lodge by C.W. Leadbeater.
The existence of perfected men is one of the most important of the many new facts which Theosophy puts before us. It follows logically from the other great theosophical teachings of karma and evolution by reincarnation. As we look around us, we see men obviously at all stages of their evolution, many far below ourselves in development, and others who in one way or another are distinctly in advance of us. Since that is so, there may well be others who are very much further advanced. Indeed, if men are steadily growing better and better through a long series of successive lives tending towards a definite goal, there should certainly be some who have already reached that goal. Some of us in the process of that development have already succeeded in unfolding some of those higher senses which are latent in every man and will be the heritage of all in the future. And by means of those senses, we are enabled to see the ladder of evolution extending far above us as well as far below us. And we can also see that there are men standing upon every rung of that ladder. There is a considerable amount of personal testimony to the existence of these adepts. Madame Blavatsky and Colonel Olcott, the co-founders of the Theosophical Society, Dr. Annie Besant, our present president, and I myself, all of us have seen these great ones, and many other members of the Society have also been privileged to see one or two of them, and there is ample testimony in what all these people have written. Furthermore, this is no new thing. There has always been a brotherhood of adepts, the Great White Brotherhood. There have always been those who knew, those who possessed this inner wisdom. And our masters are among the present representatives of that mighty line of seers and sages. I would refer you for further details about them to a book I myself have written called The Masters and the Path, and to many other volumes in the theosophical literature. For part of the knowledge which they have garnered during countless eons is now available to everyone under the name of Theosophy. But many who hear about the masters and their teachings feel an intense desire to understand them fully and to enter their service. The more a man learns, the more does he become filled with the wonder and beauty and glory of the plan, and the more anxious does he become to take part in the work. Once he has realized that God has a plan, he wants to be a fellow worker with God, and nothing else can possibly bring him satisfaction. Then he begins to ask himself the question, what must I do next? The answer is study and work. He must study first that he may work intelligently. What must he study? For one who has never heard of the subject before, I should recommend my own little pamphlet, An Outline of Theosophy. But for one who has a general grasp of the idea, I think that the best book would be First Principles of Theosophy by Mr. C. Janarajadasa. This is especially valuable because of the diagrams which it contains. It is possible for a man who is really in earnest to be taken in hand by one of these great ones and to be definitely trained in the world's work. A few of these great adepts, who are thus working for the good of the world, are willing to take as apprentices those who have resolved to devote themselves utterly to the service of mankind. And such adepts we call masters. But before an adept definitely accepts anyone, he must know that the man is really the kind of person whom he can draw into intimate contact with himself. And that is the object of the stage called probation. In that stage, the man is directed as to how he should prepare himself to be most useful to the world. And when the teacher is certain about that, he will gradually guide the man through further stages of spiritual evolution until he becomes worthy to enter that great and glorious brotherhood of which I have already spoken. To see this scheme of development is to throw oneself into it, to strive forevermore to be one with it, even though in the very humblest capacity. For he who works with God is working for eternity and not for time. And in all the eons of life for us, his work can never fail.
To Those Who Mourn by C.W. Leadbeater.
I wish to speak specially to those who mourn, those who have recently lost by death someone whom they love dearly, who perhaps was all the world to them, so that to them that world seems empty and life no longer worth the living. To such, I would say, you feel that joy has left you forever, that existence can be for you henceforth nothing but hopeless sadness, naught but one aching longing for the touch of a vanished hand and the sound of a voice that is still. You are thinking chiefly of yourself and your intolerable loss, but there may be also another sorrow. Your grief is aggravated by your uncertainty as to the present condition of your beloved friend. You feel that he has gone, you know not where. You hope earnestly that all is well with him. But when you look upward, all is void. When you cry, there is no answer. And so despair and doubt overwhelm you, and make a cloud that hides from you the sun which never sets. Your feeling is most natural. I who speak understand it perfectly, and my heart is full of sympathy for all those who are afflicted as you are. But I hope that I can do more than sympathize. I hope that I can bring you help and relief. Such help and relief have come to thousands who were in your sad case. Why should they not come to you also? You say, how can there be relief or hope for me? There is the hope of relief for you, because your sorrow is founded on misapprehension. You are grieving for something which has not really happened. When you understand the facts, you will cease to grieve. You answer, my loss is a fact. How can you help me, unless indeed You give me back my dead. I understand your feeling perfectly, yet I would ask your very earnest attention to what I am going to tell you. First, I want you clearly to understand that I am not offering you vague and speculative consolation. I am speaking to you of definite facts, which I personally know to be true from many years of experience. Nor does it rest upon my testimony alone. There is a large literature on the subject which I recommend you to study, in which hundreds of cases are given, and testimony is piled upon testimony till you can no longer refuse to believe. Some of the evidence I have quoted in a book called The Other Side of Death, to which I would refer anyone who wishes to look more deeply into these matters. With all the strength of knowledge, I tell you that your loss is only an apparent fact, apparent from your point of view. I want to bring you to another viewpoint. Your suffering is the result of a great delusion, of ignorance of nature's law. Let me help you on the road towards knowledge by explaining a few simple truths which you can study further at your leisure. You need be under no uneasiness or uncertainty with regard to the condition of your loved one, for the life after death is no longer a mystery. The world beyond the grave exists under the same natural laws as that which we know, and has been explored and examined with scientific accuracy. You must not mourn, for your mourning does harm to your loved one. If you can open your mind to the truth, you will mourn no more. I want you thoroughly to realize that there is no shadow of doubt about this, that I am putting before you scientific facts to be examined scientifically. But I am not for a moment forgetting that there is also a religious side to all this. But the proper study of that will only strengthen the conviction which I have tried to impress on you, to show you that the attitude of mourning is a faithless attitude, an ignorant attitude. The more we know, the more we shall feel with utter certainty that we and our dead alike are in the hands of perfect power and perfect wisdom, directed by perfect love.
The Tenets of Theosophy by C. Jinarajadasa.
It happens to all men at some period of their lives to ask the questions, whence have I come, whither do I go? Sometimes, too, if they have suffered much, they will also ask, is all life mere chance? Does justice rule the world? Does God exist? The great religions provide answers to these questions. Answers to some of them are provided by modern scientific theories also. But not all men find these answers completely satisfactory. And thus it happens that in every land there are men and women who are seeking for a more logical and more inspiring solution. It is to these that theosophy has a special message. Theosophy is a body of ideas which are very old. Some of them are found in the religions and philosophies of India, China, Egypt, Greece, Palestine, Arabia. Others come from the discoveries of scientists of the past and the present. Theosophy is not presented to you as a revelation or dogma. It is not offered to you for belief, but for your examination and judgment. What, then, are the main tenets of theosophy? First, that the universe is not just a place where nature's forces operate by chance. Every event that has happened from the beginning of time has happened according to certain laws inherent in the universe. These laws are the expressions of a consciousness. Everything that exists, from the electron to the largest star, is impregnated with consciousness. This fundamental reality is so beyond our grasp that sages and saints have called it by contradictory terms. Many have termed it God, but some have called it law, heaven, the great architect, evolution. Each man, according to his temperament and his experience, must determine how he will regard this consciousness which directs everything. Let us call it God. The next great truth is that the nature of God resides in every man and woman. We are not these bodies which perish. They are only garments which we wear for a while and cast aside. We are immortal souls. The perfection of God dwells in us also, for we live and move and have our being in Him. But we are unconscious of our divine nature till we awaken it. It is to realize our true nature that we are born. Our birth is as the entrance into a workshop or laboratory, where by work we slowly unfold our faculties. But it is not possible to realize the divine nature in us by the experiences of one lifetime. So we reincarnate again and again. We enter into life, we are born, we grow, we act, we finish our work, and we return. Our return is death. After a rest in heaven, growing by realizing the joys we planned but did not achieve, we return to birth again, more purified, stronger, wiser, to work again, so as to become more expert in thought and feeling and action. This is reincarnation. As we live and act, we do good and evil. When we do evil, we create discord in the universal harmony, and we must restore that harmony. The evil we did must be undone by new good. The good we did must be reshaped to a more far-reaching good. This process of sowing and reaping is called karma. It is the law of readjustment which a man puts into operation by every one of his thoughts, words, and deeds. Since all souls are divine, all souls are equal. There are young souls and old souls, but all are brothers. In spite of every difference of race, creed, sex, caste, or color, of goodness or wickedness, all men form an indivisible brotherhood. All of us, high or low, ignorant or wise, make a chain, and the stronger grow by helping the weaker. Brotherhood is a law of growth for all men. But this brotherhood extends to all. Animals, birds, fishes, even the plants, mountains, and seas. We grow by our unity with all things. The divine nature, which is latent in them as in us, helps our inherent divinity to step forth in its beauty. There are two eternal mysteries, the mystery of God and the mystery of man. All that we postulate concerning God, of goodness, holiness, truth, and beauty, reside in man. Religion, philosophy, science, the arts, commerce, industry, philanthropy, all these are channels along which the divine nature descends to reveal its beauty. And our human nature ascends to divinity by growing in the virtues and capacities associated with these channels. Theosophy means the wisdom of God. It is a statement of the modes of action of the divine mind. All our questions are solved when once we understand God's plan, which is evolution. And this understanding is the heritage of every soul. But he will possess it only as he learns to be a brother to all that lives. For loving action is the divine wisdom at work, and whoso acts lovingly will inevitably come to the wisdom.
Diamond Jubilee Message to Members by G.S. Arundel.
Fellow members, I greet you very heartily from Adyar on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the sending forth into the outer world of the Theosophical Society. Our society is one of the few world movements which stand for universal brotherhood, irrespective of all distinctions of race, nationality, creed, class, color, or opinion. The society only asks from a candidate for membership that he or she shall be in sympathy with its three objects. The first, declaring that the society exists to help to draw the world into a very real brotherhood, strengthened and not weakened or torn by its constituent diversities. The second, emphasizing the need for the study of the great religions so that their true purpose and mutual relationship may be perceived. The third, encouraging an adventurous search for truth, especially in regions so far unexplored by man, on the principle of the society's unique motto, "There is no religion higher than truth." The Society's records show that nearly 150,000 persons have been attracted to membership from about 50 countries. Many have joined through sympathy with one or another of the Society's three great objects, eager for brotherhood, eager for understanding, eager for truth. But some have joined because of an insistent inner response to the declaration by the Society's two great founders, Madam H.P. Blavatsky and Colonel H.S. Olcott, as to its origin and inner purpose, a declaration fully endorsed by their successors. The founders have stated in unmistakable language that the society exists by direction of some who are far in advance of humanity on life's evolutionary way, who are in fact the elder brothers of humanity, as humanity is the elder brother of the subhuman kingdoms. They have revealed that the society exists not only to become a living witness to the reality and attainability of the universal brotherhood of life, not only to study and understand the many forms in which wisdom discloses herself to man, not only to encourage the study of hidden truth, but no less to become a special channel between evolving life in the human kingdom and the life more highly evolved in the superhuman kingdoms, to the end that at least the ardent few may travel more quickly to the goal of the human kingdom and reach the opening of the way in the loftier kingdom beyond. Join the society because in them is stirring this longing to make more rapid progress on life's unfolding course, and because they have an inner conviction that there is here and now a narrow way, a way of holiness, which may be trodden with the help of those greater travelers who are our truest guides, philosophers, and friends. And these members somehow know that the Theosophical Society, and above all the priceless science of theosophy, can potently help them both to justify their conviction and to satisfy their longing. Wonderful work has been done during the past 60 years. With the help of theosophy, the world has been definitely changed. But great work lies ahead of us and of the generations of theosophists to come, provided we are careful never to lose sight of the society's fundamental purposes. First, we must continue to strive to make brotherhood a living reality throughout the society. We must become increasingly understanding and appreciative of the many divergent conceptions of theosophy cherished by our fellow members. For every member, by very virtue of his membership, enjoys perfect freedom in his search for truth, and must not find among his fellows the narrow dogmatism which insists that upon its philosophy alone is imprinted the hallmark of truth. Second, we must make the spreading of the theosophy our founders were privileged to receive our particular, even if not our exclusive care. Never must we allow the essential and universal life of theosophy to become obscured by any personally congenial forms. Impersonally, purely, has theosophy come to us. Impersonally, purely, must we pass it on. Third, wise in the principles of theosophy, we must aid them to help the world. We must be knowers of the wisdom, but we must be workers of the wisdom too. Let us thus commemorate this Diamond Jubilee, firmly establishing the society on those foundations of wisdom and activity, which themselves imperishable shall make the society eternal. No outer circumstances shall prevail against a society in which sincere and understanding friendship links member to member without exception, and in which the freedom of each is respected by all. Where friendship and freedom go hand in hand, life and power exists, such as the inner founders themselves would see in their society.
What Theosophy Is by G.S. Arundel.
What is theosophy? My own favorite definition is that it is God's knowledge of himself. And when I use the word God, I am thinking of no anthropomorphic personage, but of a mighty radiance who is life and light and glory, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. Hence theosophy is the science, or if you will, the religion or philosophy of life. Theosophy is religion, whence religions come forth. Theosophy is science, whence sciences emerge. Theosophy is philosophy, whence philosophies are derived. No less is theosophy the science of individuality in all its smallest details. Theosophy is the order of life, the law of life, the purpose of life. Such is theosophy in reality. Yet from time to time, God reveals to men, themselves gods in their becoming, fragments of his knowledge of himself. In the sciences, science stands fragmentarily revealed. In the religions, religion stands fragmentarily revealed. In the philosophies, philosophy stands fragmentarily revealed. In the gods, who are all living creatures, God stands fragmentarily revealed. Such revelation is in very truth the more to be, shining upon the less in actuality, as the sun rises to awaken a sleeping world. The theosophy we study in the splendid literature of the Theosophical Society is surely infinitely less than God's knowledge of himself, but it is certainly the revelation of a microscopic fragment of that knowledge suited to the needs of the time upon which the revealing shines. And while on the one hand it emphasizes certain aspects of the divine knowledge specially needed to be known to the modern world, on the other hand it discloses a bird's eye view of such knowledge through the whole period of its evolutionary growth, from a beginning to an infinitely lofty stage of its consummation. It is a revealing from above, for it comes from those who are masters of the divine knowledge. It is not a seeking from below. It is a shining of the sun of life, not a mountain of experience. Yet it is a call to experience, for faith, belief, hope are not enough. In mighty visions, in startling perceptions of truth, in cataclysmic adjustments of natural phenomena, in catastrophic evolutionary revolutions, in great acts of sacrifice and heroism, in humble unknown lives of simple devotion, no less than in the teachings of great teachers or in the words of great scriptures, often stand revealed fragments of God's knowledge of himself. For the manifestation of the glorious in any is living witness to the existence of the glorious in all. When God reveals even the biggest fragment of himself, he reveals to each and to every one of us a fragment of our own eventual knowledge of ourselves. For as he is God victorious, so are we God's conquering. Thus does theosophy seek entry into the little microcosms of us all, changing, adjusting, interpreting, prophesying, declaring, exalting, unfolding. It takes our various problems and shows us the way to mastery over them all. It shows us whence we have come, what was before birth and long, long ago. It shows us in all detail the nature of our present being in its manifold expressions of life. It shows us where we are on life's ladder, which reaches from earth to heaven. It shows us our way beyond death's innumerable, beyond life after life, right to the ladder's summit, to the individual kingship of each one of us, to the God victorious, which each and all shall someday be. Theosophy unveils the mystery of death, thus robbing it of all its gruesomeness, of all its power to cause us fear, of all its power to make us desolate. Theosophy unveils the mystery of sorrow, of grief, of misery, of unhappiness, thus revealing them as friends and not as enemies. Theosophy endows us with knowledge and wisdom that these may take the place of crippling and stultifying doubt. Above all, theosophy gives us courage, for it reveals to us a future triumphant, rising phoenix-like out of the coldest ashes of present desolation. Theosophy wakens hope asleep and touches every cloud with the silver lining of its lofty purpose. Theosophy gives freedom, showing it to be most glorious when the eager servant of order, of law, of godlike destiny. Theosophy gives a friendship which few of us as yet know, showing us that there is but one life, that this life is everywhere and in all things, in every kingdom of nature, in the very least of the things we can touch or see or taste or smell or hear, thus making of the whole universe a family, with God the Father, Mother, with innumerable countless gods the children, brothers all. Theosophy is the science of freedom and the science of friendship. It is the science of understanding and therefore of appreciation. It is the science of seeking, of achieving, of sharing, and of happiness radiant in them all. And in the Theosophical Society, we have a unique movement in which we may seek theosophy together and find it differently, in which we may live its freedom and its friendship in ever-increasing purity and power, and through which we may help the world to travel more quickly on its way from darkness to light. Theosophy and the Theosophical Society, gifts from those who have found to those who are still in search, gifts which illumine the way of each where he is, causing it to become a way of happiness, even though still a way of hardship. But as each gift is used, its light increases, until at last its possessor attains the supreme discovery that he is the light, and that as he shines, so does he become.